program has been edited for rebroadcast.
Good evening. This is Kevin Cook, your host. Got an excellent guest tonight, a friend of mine and other. He's also a host on this Inception Network, Jerry Pippin. He's an excellent radio host. We'll talk to Jerry in just a minute. As an introduction, you might also look at my Facebook page. I'm Kevin Cook among all the Kevin Cooks on Facebook, but I have a red shirt on and I'm at a book signing, if that is any demarcation. But it's got all kinds of interesting stories in this little Facebook page. I get about 40 different UFO pieces a week, and also little interesting news pieces, because, for example, on the site today, it was reported that George Bush, the Canadians were calling for George Bush's arrest in Canada for war crimes, and that didn't make the national news here, but it did on this little Facebook page. I think it would be kind of interesting to you, so give it a shot. You, if you like UFOs and the paranormal and the political area, then you'll certainly like that little Facebook page. Give it a try. Relative to the Occupy Wall Street movement, that's just been a very fascinating situation, to me at least, and it's really occurring all over the country, perhaps 2,000 cities in one place or another, and truly internationally in Canada and even in London. A lot of little news items came up. New York unions, for example, vowed to support Wall Street protesters, which, you know, is kind of an interesting concept. Now, the Occupy Wall Street movement is kind of a little diffuse, in that it's not, I won't say necessarily leaderless, but as close to leaderless as you can get. It represents essentially dissatisfaction on the public's part and the way the economy is going. Certainly young people that are involved in it are dissatisfied with having a relative dearth of opportunities. And I think the bottom of it is really economic dislocation. And I've never in my life, which has been a fairly long one, seen wealth concentrated so strongly in the upper 1%. And of course, that's the logo of this group, is they're the 99%. So it does have some merit. Like Rush Limbaugh and Rusty Humphreys and Michael Savages, or the right-wing types, are kind of snarkily kind of describing this movement as being kind of idiotic, if you will. But I don't think it's that many people being dissatisfied and truly unhappy is something to just dismiss that readily. That from 2008 to the current period, congressional wealth, that is the collective net worth of the House and Senate, has gone up to $2.4 billion from $1.65 billion in 2008. So say they've done just fine in the same period where, well, the incomes of the average American have gone down 23%. That is, the net household worth has gone down 23% from $125,000 to $96,000. So, you know, all these are areas where you could certainly understand why there'd be some dissatisfaction. Now, our guest tonight is a relatively legendary broadcaster. He's excellent. He's the one I download the most on my podcasts. I'd like to introduce Oklahoman just up the road, Jerry Pippin. How you doing, Jerry?
Hey, great to be on your show, Kevin. And you've been doing some pretty interesting things. And I'm fairly impressed. If you want to talk about Occupy Wall Street, I got lots of ideas about it.
Well, I sure do, because, I mean, this has fascinated me as much as I was just on the last end of the Vietnam War period. I went in the Army around that time. But what I'm saying is I remember being a young kid, and there was all this activity and protests and all this, and this is the only time since then that I've seen anything of this nature. And this is much more widespread than that. Doesn't it seem so to you that it's more widespread than just the anti-war stuff at the time?
Well, you know, this movement is a little different than just a straight anti-war protest.
Yeah.
And I was in the Army in the 60s, and actually I wore my uniform a lot. I never really had, anti-war protesters spit on me or anything, but I'm not saying it didn't happen. There's always an unruly bunch in any demonstration. People are always protesting for different reasons, showing up and actually doing things. But I think really we could phrase this with two words about the Occupy Wall Street movement, and that's it's about fairness and it's about opportunity.
Yeah.
And the system has gradually begun to cater to a certain group, and the rest of us, maybe not 99%, but a good portion of the people feel left out. And they are left out. If you look at the statistics, it's just really amazing. I think it's about 42% of the American public is under the poverty level now.
I know. It's tremendous. I've never seen anything like this. Never. Never.
And at the same time, Wall Street and that symbol is basically these people are doing better than ever before.
Yeah, just like the congressional thing, I agree with you.
And I talked to many people in that group. I'm not in that group, unfortunately. but they really don't get the movement. They don't get what's happening.
Right.
And the reason is because they're doing just fine, and they really don't associate with the rest of us. And basically, there's a lot of things I'd like to talk about this movement. One of the things to maybe to get away from the economic part of it, and the economic part is definitely the overriding reason, I think. But we're seeing a system here. Kevin, I thought we had the right to assemble in this country.
I know it. I know it. And all this brutality is showing up in these various locales. I know.
For instance, you mentioned I'm here in Oklahoma, and I'm right outside Tulsa.
Yeah.
And they have an Occupy Tulsa group right now. And they have the mayor there, Mayor Bartlett, who wants to force them out and make them stop protesting. Hmm. The chief of police went down there today where the protesters are outside the city hall. At a second encampment, also at 6th and Boston downtown. And he said, well, we're not going to do anything yet. But then he said it's up to the city council, and I believe the city council meets tonight or tomorrow. And we have, you have it in Oakland and Denver and a lot of places where police brutality is there.
I know. Why are there not some prosecutions of people, these police? I mean, I thought that's what the state police.
I think that's what the Occupy Wall Street movement's all about.
Yeah.
The Justice Department in this country is broken. It's heavily stacked in favor of people who either A, have money, or B, have power, and usually they go hand in hand.
Right.
And as a result of that, many people over the years who have been poor and then been rich have suddenly realized when they were rich that the justice system treats them a little differently.
Right.
And now you have what's happening with police brutality is something that the unintended consequences. They had the shield laws passed because policemen were being, taken to court and sued for damages because they were doing their duty, supposedly. But the unintended consequences of the shield law is now when a policeman does brutality to a citizen and the citizen sues that policeman and that police unit, the force itself, they usually settle for a money judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And the money judgment basically comes from the taxpayers.
Yeah.
It does not come from the police department. It does not really come from the out of the pockets of the people who did the deeds.
Right.
And so other people's money has infiltrated our entire system.
Well, I know just the other day, NBC... perhaps about 2 weeks ago, NBC's Brian Williams, they had Larry O'Donnell, who's done a lot of reporting on this up in New York, and he stressed that without question, without fail, they were peaceful protesters. It was the NYPD that were ones being brutal and getting out of line, not the protesters. They're very careful to maintain the straight and narrow and not, you know, agitate the police. So without question, O'Donnell reported on that on MSNBC that there was no doubt it was a police riot, not a protester riot. I'm sorry, go ahead.
And the problem, you see, is most of these people would get back to people who are working and making a good income. The police very seldom bother them. In fact, we've gone to the South American model of walled encampments, basically, for residential neighborhoods.
Yeah.
You have neighborhood watch programs. You have citizens and vigilante groups running around. We have taken, and the politicians, in my opinion, are the ones that are guilty of this more than anything else. They created fear.
Right.
Everyone's afraid. You talk to just about anybody, they're afraid of that man who's standing over there by the shadows by the grocery store, but he may be just minding his own business.
Right.
But we've all been alerted, and we have been brainwashed, and you and I, Kevin, and the media have to share some of the blame for this.
Yeah.
When you look at police shows like Cops and other reality shows, and they routinely beat up people, drag them across the street, and they don't get any trouble at all. They get promoted, and on top of that, they get on television.
I remember even when I was a kid, my older brother was a Baltimore County policeman, and he'd have a throw-down gun. And the idea being is if you had to shoot somebody or decide to shoot somebody, all you had to do is throw that throw-down gun there, and then he was in the clear. So, I mean, that was from an early age a baptism into how bad this was. I know what you're saying.
We've gotten into a position here, and I don't want to sound like I'm anti-cop or anti-police, because I'm not.
No.
I am anti-people hiding behind the badge of authority,
right,
and taking advantage of the disadvantaged.
I absolutely am. One of the things, I mean, I don't mean to interject into this, to, you know, particularly, but one time when I was younger and, I was just gotten out of college and I was in Houston. I was, basically a trainee at Travelers Insurance. And one of the fellows in my training class, he went to work for the Harris County Sheriff's Department down there. And he said, "Oh, Kevin, we need to have you here. Rough old fella, and you'd be another Dirty Harry over here," and all this stuff. He's constantly trying to get me to come on duty with him, And I was tickled with the idea, but he told me one story once that he was terrorizing these poor little Mexican immigrants and threatening to throw them in the bayou, and I just told him, "Look, pal, you ain't good enough for me to hang around with. You're not in the Army anymore, and you ain't no real man." And basically, that was the end of our little friendship and all that. But there is a certain mentality of a bully kind of mentality that permeates a lot of the police departments. And
Kevin, this has actually evolved into their profiles now. Personality profiles. To become a police officer, you have to be what we used to call in psychology in high school and college warrior types. In other words, you like to push your weight around, you like a little of authority.
Yeah.
Those are the people that get hired.
Right.
And that's not the way the police departments should be, in my opinion. I think the best lesson, and to see how far we've gone in our policing, and I think much in the wrong direction, it's the fact that neighborhood policing is, really frowned upon by many police departments and many officers.
Oh,
they'd
yeah.
rather ride around in their air-conditioned cars
right.
for their 8-hour shift, or 10 hours in some places,
yeah.
and basically they have given the message that if they have to get out of that air-conditioned car, somebody's going to pay.
Oh, I see.
You go to any urban area to the projects, and you will see that there's no respect for the police.
Yeah.
And the reason there's no respect is remember when you and I were kids, the police department would knock on your door and you'd have somebody like Joe Friday,
right,
from Dragnet fame and maybe a partner, and they would ask a few questions, and if you did something wrong, you were arrested.
Right.
And that's not the way they do it now, and it all started in Los Angeles where Joe Friday actually served, even though he really wasn't a real person. The fact is that Chief Gates introduced the paramilitary concept to police departments.
Oh, okay.
And when you get a bunch of police officers together, and many of them are ex-military people, and you make them look like they're in fatigues and they have ready battle gear and whatever, things are going to get out of hand. If you remember the Bowery Boys movies many years ago, the cop was always there, and everybody knew him. He was on the beat.
Right.
And that's very seldom the case anymore. So back in those days, if a cop got in trouble, everybody in the neighborhood would rise to his defense.
Sure.
Now they don't do anything because they look upon the cops as part of the problem. And until we, you know, and the Occupy Wall Street movement, I'm going to get back to the financial part of it and why they're doing what they're doing here in a moment. But this is a very important lesson, and I don't see America up in arms about it. How many times do we have to see on television police officers, like in Denver, we have on our website at jerrypippin.com on This Week in Politics, a video of the police officers lined up as far as you can see,
wow,
in battle uniforms, and you got maybe 100 protesters.
Yeah.
And what is the message there? Why are we spending those kind of assets on protesters?
I know some kids that are basically what
threat is it? Isn't the police supposed to be protecting you and me and society in general?
You get a real input of fascist input in here, yes, as opposed to just a protective format. I know what you're saying, a public safety format. It kind of strikes me more like the Syria kind of deal. They've had video I've seen on, you know, posted on this little Facebook website of mine and other places. I've seen how that one woman was slugged by a cop in New York. I mean, you know, of course, everybody's got these video cameras on their phones now, so there's a lot more video and real evidence of this stuff that didn't used to exist, and maybe it's being uncovered more than it used to exist. But what I'm saying is, you know, basically this cop just hauled off and slugged some woman who was relatively inoffensive. And I don't know whether he broke her jaw or not, but he laid her out. And then, of course, that Scott Olson fellow, that ex-Marine guy, was in critical condition being hit by a beanbag weapon out in Oakland. So this is way over the top stuff, Jerry. It really is.
You know, what needs to happen? And I don't see any interest in this happening. Maybe it will. The Occupy Wall Street movement does have the potential to actually be catching on and change the American political scene completely. A lot of people have been laughing at it and thinking it's not going to happen. But you watch it, it continues to build because of this discontent, and we're just talking about one thing, and that's authority, and the idea that people in authority in America have the attitude they can do any damn thing they want.
Well, I know. It's been underscored so many
times. They didn't get this attitude overnight.
No.
They got it over decades of law and order politicians pushing that idea.
Yep.
And so the point is, when you have a mayor, like in Oakland, or in Tulsa, Oklahoma, as I just mentioned earlier, who wants the cops to go in and beat up citizens for doing their right to assemble and freedom of speech instead of going out and getting real crooks.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, we find out they don't even get the real crooks. They're too busy framing people.
And I shouldn't say this, but I can say this from some personal insight. I know of a situation in rural Texas where some sheriffs who I know, and they're actually friends of mine, good friends, but I know that they were confronted with some mafiosos, and the mafia said, basically, get in your car and get the hell out of here. And they did. So what I'm saying is there's a certain cowardice that goes with some of this excess brutality. I do really believe that. And I have seen it. In other words, these cops can brutalize a bunch of, you know.
You know, these people call you up on the phone and solicit money for the state police or the highway patrol or the fraternal order police.
Yeah.
They probably have me on a negative list because the first thing I say out of my mouth to them, and I tell you before I even tell you what I say, is I have had friends that used to operate these phone rooms. And the police departments get very little of that money.
Oh, that happens a lot, I know. They get, what, 10%?
And not only do they get a low percentage to begin with, but the people operating these phone rooms, by and large, are con men to begin with.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they steal as much as they can.
Yeah, true.
Now, I always tell them, and I'm trying to make a point, and nobody really gets it, maybe somebody will tonight. Why would I give money to the police department? That guy just pulled me over for running a red light, and I wasn't sold around, and he charged me $500 in court.
Right.
And see, this is part of the unrest that we're talking about with Occupy Wall Street. It's not just the political ramifications.
Now,
we can talk about that in a minute, and I want to talk about the political ramifications of it, because we have people in authority in Washington, D.C., in state capitals, in city halls, and they all have security. Now, maybe they need security. I'm not so sure they need as much security as they have. If you're out as a, you know, we ask our soldiers to go to Iraq and Afghanistan, Vietnam, or wherever, and put their life and limb on line every day. And yet the politicians have to have a driver, two detectives guarding them, Secret Service men everywhere. Why? Why? They can't put their life on the line?
No.
Aren't they doing this for public service?
Well, frankly.
No, they're not. We have allowed them, and I want to go back to the Los Angeles Police Department here, to the unintended consequences of things.
Yeah.
We have allowed them, by paying them more money and giving them benefits, which they deserve, don't misunderstand me.
Yeah.
But what happens, like in the L.A. Police Department, all the officers make $60,000 or more.
Right.
None of them live in L.A. anymore. They live in the suburbs.
Sure.
And they drive into work, and they drive into these rotten areas where no human being should live at all. And we warehouse these human beings, and you see them on the street. If you drive through those areas, it's almost too much to bear if you have a conscience at all.
So what happens is
people drive through there, and they keep seeing this, and then they start rationalizing.
Yeah.
Well, those people could get out of there if they wanted to.
Right.
Those people could go get them a job. Those people could... Well, that's not as easy said as done. And so then you have the political climate where all of a sudden we are pitting the people with the money against the people who don't have it.
Yeah.
In other words, that's the whole bitch about social programs. If they're taking my money and they're giving it those bombs.
Well, like Michelle Bachmann, nobody's benefited more than social people, one of these, you know, soapbox types about the anti-social programs and all that, and they looked into her stuff. She's gotten more bennies than anybody out there.
Well, that's what I'm getting to.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Over the last 20 or 30 or 40 years, and it's always been part of the political establishment, and this is hypocrisy.
Yeah.
But hypocrisy is rampant now.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody, I mean, they just, you take it from, you know, the family values, politicians, almost every one of them has a girlfriend.
Yeah.
You know, it goes on and on and on. So people over the decades have decided they don't believe anybody.
I know, and you can't blame them either.
And cynicism runs rampant, but you can't blame them. because we talked a little bit, and you mentioned Republicans earlier, and I haven't mentioned them yet on purpose, but I will now. Basically, what happens here is the Republican Party was a minority party, and there was only one way for them to get elected, and that's divide and conquer, and basically get group against group and get the people motivated. You mentioned Bush and the war criminal trial. By the way, they have one in coming up in Lampoon.
No.
And November 24th through 27th, I think, or maybe 27th through 30th, in which Cheney and Bush are being tried in absentia.
Okay.
But I'm not getting into that because that's a hot topic. What I wanted to make was the point, as Lee Atwater said, and when he handled the Reagan campaign, and later he apologized for it, was basically that's the only way they could get elected.
Yeah.
It was to turn people against others. And those that we call it franchised and not franchised, but it's a nice way of saying people with wealth and people without. Now, what has happened? What has happened here, Kevin? I don't mean to, corner the conversation.
No, that's fine, because you're dealing with stuff in depth, and I appreciate that.
The point, what's happening here is all of a sudden, with inflation and the cost of living and the housing bubble, which everybody knew was going to happen. I mean, there's no way in hell that a $100,000 house is worth $500,000 and routinely financed that way, because they literally got the banks involved in it, and everybody was in on the con job.
They were.
And that's exactly what they've been doing for many years now. We talk about the 401k, and that a lot of people make some money with 401ks. But the hard and fast reason that Congressman Roth did the 401k was to get a lot of money into Wall Street, and he did. And when you're awash with money, then people like in 2008 when the bottom fell out, if we had not had credit cards and some social programs in place, we would have had a bigger depression than the Great Depression.
That's true.
Now all of a sudden we give them $700 billion to places like Bank of America. And what do? They still get passed out their bonuses, and on top of that, they even raise, they charge you $5 a month now to use your own money on a debit card.
And pay you no interest. I'm just an old salesman for the most part, and you have to kind of sharpen your wits, not that I'm a grand genius or anything, but you have to kind of sharpen your wits to make a living in sales over all these years. And you get to you read people and circumstances. And like I say, there's a limit to those abilities, but any idiot can see that this thing has been manipulated. I talked to my banker at Compass Bank. I have a couple different banks I use, and I talked to him, and I remember it was reported right after the 2008 crash deal. I said, it's true that the Federal Reserve orchestrated all this, isn't it? He said, oh, absolutely. What they had, Jerry, was like a $1.2 trillion or whatever it was, and it's available every day for borrowing and passing around between banks. And what they did is they pulled back $1 trillion out of the $1.2 trillion one day, and it precipitated a crisis just like pulling the diesel out of a truck. I mean, it was made to crash. I mean, this whole thing was as organized as a football game. One thing that's maybe a quote from yesterday year that people think doesn't have any applicable circumstances to today's life, or then they're mistaken, is FDR said in finance and economics, nothing is by chance. Nothing. It's all parceled out, and all economic policy is all hashed out in back rooms and everything else. And you've got the smoking gun, and there's smoking guns out there, like we've had in other different shows, like with the 911 thing, there's thermite in the buildings, boys. I mean, this isn't something that's a naturally occurring item. Just like in my Compass Bank example, the Federal Reserve was freely reported. They took all the money out of the money system that day. And what's going to happen? Things are going to come. The little house of cards is going to come down. So all this was done so that the richer elite types can benefit from this depression, just like they benefited from the last one. And you know, people say, "Oh, you're just a whacked out conspiratorial theorist." Well, look, I've said this on other shows. One of the themes of this show is nothing is the way it seems. Everything is a conspiracy. It's a little junior conspiracy to have you on the show tonight. It's a conspiracy what the gas stations here in town charge for gas. It's a conspiracy who gets what job. It's just everything is by necessity a conspiracy, especially in areas of economics.
You know, that's one of our key things at JerryPippin.com are conspiracy shows.
Oh, yeah.
And we're known probably more for UFO and paranormal shows, but we do political shows as well.
Your show is my favorite show, and that's why I do download it more than any other. And you have a diversity of topics just like I like, and I absolutely had to have you as a guest. Jerry, let's take a little break for about 3 or 4 minutes, and then I'll... attend to this radio dog. I have a mascot here.
Okay, and I want to mention a couple other reasons why
sure.
people were upset when we come back. And somebody in the chat room just said they liked my zeal.
Well,
thank
I should
you.
Hope so. Well, I should hope they would, because I sure do. And I guess what I can't understand is the things you and I can see. Are people, like, stupid all of a sudden? I mean, the Compass Bank manager was not any CIA operative. He was just a banking executive that knew what they did. And it was reported in some newspaper reports and commentators that the Federal Reserve did what it was supposed that it was going to do that day. Why don't other people see that, Jerry?
Because they don't want to.
I guess that's it.
They're quite happy, but that's the reason in economic times things get rough. Because then you're forced to look at these things.
I guess so. Well, let's take our little 3-minute break, and we'll come back and hash it through some more.